Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. How's it going today, Scott?
It's another day in paradise, man. I'm not sitting in bomb cyclones anymore. I saw the sun today. That was nice. The fog finally lifted.
You must not be, not in our part of Jacksonville.
No.
Foggy and cloudy and blah here too. But yeah, it's been a while since we talked. We actually pre-recorded a few episodes because of the holidays and you were on vacation. So it's been like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks since we actually recorded an episode together.
Yeah, something like that. So let's go ahead and get back into it today. What do you want to talk about today?
Today, we thought,
both executive of us came together.
Yeah, it was kind of an executive decision. I just kind of told you we were going to talk about this. Office 365 Advanced Threat Protection.
Ooh, ATP.
Yes, kind of an interesting topic. I think we may have mentioned it on one of our other shows when we were talking about some of the Exchange Online protection, because ATP in the past has just been a part of Exchange Online. And again, we mentioned it. We didn't dive into a lot of details, I don't think, at that time. And they have also kind of expanded ATP a little bit now. So it includes SharePoint, OneDrive, and Teams. So I figured, hey, why not do like a comprehensive ATP episode and just dive into ATP a little bit, talk about everything ATP related.
Awesome. So we should probably start at the beginning. What is ATP?
So ATP, like we said, it's Advanced Threat Protection, and it is an add-on to Office 365. So it primarily protects you against things like malware in your inbox, and then people clicking on links in Exchange Online that may go out to a site, a malicious site somewhere. So that's kind of the Exchange Online part of it. As they've started rolling this out to SharePoint, it helps protect the same type of thing, files in SharePoint that you may go out and try to download from your SharePoint environment or save with others that may include malware, may be malicious files. So it's an enhanced malicious file protection aspect to Office 365.
Yep. Primarily positioned as email though, right? Like if you go and read about it, it's going to talk about securing your mailboxes from advanced threats. So those are going to be things like malware campaigns, real-time heuristics that Microsoft sees coming in, really anything they can build into the backend platform, right? You've got unsafe attachments, which applies to SharePoint as well, right? Like, don't let me download bad things.
Yep.
So that nice safe attachments feature. So basically, we're going to scan things as they come in real time, and then let you as the administrators decide, do you want to make sure everything's scanned first? Do you want to scan on demand? Like, what does that look like and what happens there, right? So again, we're geared towards kind of malware-free inbox. And then, you know, we've got our client protections and other things in place, but, you know, let's cover it on the server side as well. You also have malicious link clicks, right? So if anybody's ever done something like a proof point, which is really effectively kind of what this is, or like a Cisco AMP or things like that, you can go ahead and put some protection in front of your users when they are using either their Outlook client or Outlook Online, anything like that, because all your links are rendered out from the mail server, right? So that's coming in along the way. So everything is scanned, URLs are automatically rewritten, examined in real time, all that kind of stuff. Of course, this is being a server-side feature, you get reporting and all those kinds of things. So you actually get some insight into where users have clicked and what they've done with things. And then you get some richer tracing mechanisms as well, right? So typically we would go into the Exchange Admin Center, EAC, and maybe we had to do like a message trace based on a sender message ID or something like that that we saw in our environment. Once you turn this feature on, you can do that URL tracing as well. So you can start to not only have visibility into what users are clicking into out of their email, but also be able to categorize, block, further drill in and kind of dial in your configuration a little bit.
Exactly. And there's even some aspects of it that we can talk about here too in a little bit that tie into mobile devices and protecting you against clicking on links in certain mobile applications on your mobile device. So it really does add that extra layer of security, again, specifically geared towards links and files and users downloading or accessing those. It's also kind of unique in that a lot of these features, add-ons to Office 365 maybe surface a new area of administration. When you enable ATB, where you actually go to stuff is kind of intermingled throughout the various aspects, primarily in the Security and Compliance Center. So it's not like you're going to get an ATP menu or an ATP administration center in Office 360 or in that Security and Compliance Center. It's just going to kind of surface a few things in different areas around it. And then another thing is probably, well, we're talking about it, it's an add-on. How much is it? How do you get it? That type of thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, right? Because it's a little bit different than just saying, oh, I'm an Office 365 subscriber. Do I already have...
This one is unique in that you can add this on to actually just about any single Office 365 plan. So they do have a SKU that is just Office 365 ATP. And it can be added on to any of the business plans. It can be added on to any of the enterprise plans. So business premium, business essentials, I think is the online services one, your E1, your E3. In the documentation, they still call out E4. I don't know if people actually still have E4s.
There are people that have them. They're in transition from E4s to E5s, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. So you can, if you're in that transition, you can still add it on. I would, if you're looking to do it and you're in that transition phase, it is one of those that's actually included in E5. So you can add it on to any of those. Again, I think I forgot to mention, because it's an Exchange feature too, if you just have Exchange Online plans, so one of those Exchange Online Plan 1 or Plan 2s, you can actually get the ATP as an add-on to just an Exchange Online plan. So if you're just doing Exchange mailboxes, and you want to have that additional protection, you can go ahead and add this onto it as well. And then, like I said, it is included in E5. So if you're in that E4 to E5 transition, you're going to get it once you get to that E5 plan, because it is included. This is not, however, included in enterprise mobility and security, those EMS plans, the E3 and E5. I had in my head that it was, and I actually did some looking this morning, and I was like, huh, you know what, ATP doesn't appear to be, at least from everything I could find, included in that EMS suite of security products.
It's not. It's a little bit more on there. And I think that's one of those confusing things, right? We have enterprise mobility and security. We have, you know, the Exchange Online only plans, like you mentioned. You also have the other EOP, right? Which is Exchange Online Protection, which is included in those E3s, E5s. It's just kind of there, not as an add-on. So, you know, why would somebody want to go the extra step or go above and beyond EOP, Exchange Online Protection, all the way over to Advanced Threat Protection, even just for email, right? Like, let's kind of leave SharePoint and things aside for a second and just talk email. But what's the tangible benefit for them there?
So the tangible benefit here is that malware and link detection. So if you don't have this, somebody sends your users an email that says, hey, click on this link to go sign this document. They maybe do some spoofing. It looks like it came from your CEO. You're like, oh, I should really go click on that. You click the link and you get instantly affected. From that safe links perspective, what this does is it actually routes you through essentially a scanner to check that link and make sure that it's not a malicious link. It's not going to go download some malware onto your computer. It's not one of those known links you want to block. So you get an email in, it has a link in it. If you actually look at that URL in the link, it doesn't have the real URL in there. It has a Safe Links Microsoft URL that kind of does a redirect, a reroute to kind of help protect you from going to those malicious links. Another thing you can do too is within those different policies that you can set for Exchange Online, because you also have different policies here where you can set different conditions, different exceptions for links. So maybe if they are linking to, say, your internal SharePoint site, you have Office 365, you're using Exchange Online, you're using SharePoint Online, And you're like, you know what? If they're going to go to contoso.sharepoint.com, that's my company, I don't really care about checking for safe links. So you can whitelist certain URLs too, so it doesn't route them through. It doesn't do the checking on the safe links. And in addition to whitelisting, you can also manually block URLs. So maybe you don't want, for whatever reason, people to be able to email links to, let's say, YouTube. It's not malicious, but you just want to block it. So people aren't always emailing YouTube links around. Granted, they're going to find other ways to send them around. But, or if there's a site that you just know is malicious, you don't want your users visiting, you want to block it, you can actually manually define some of those URLs too that you might want to block as a safe link. So you say, no, this is not a safe link. This is not some link I want my users emailing around. Let's just completely block this URL. Those are kind of the two aspects of safe links that you really gain some benefit there on controlling what links your users go to and protecting essentially their naivety in they may accidentally click on a link and you just want to help add that extra layer of protection. Safe attachments, again, is something very similar. Microsoft has a list of known malware. It can recognize that malware. And when an email comes in, if there's malware on it, it'll automatically strip off that malware and just send the body of the email without the malware attachment. You can set different policies too to handle it differently. Another big advantage that I like of the malware protection or the safe attachments is it also doesn't, if it doesn't know the file, if it can't figure out, is this malware? Is this not malware? Do I strip it off? Do I not strip it off? You can actually configure it. So it will deliver the message. You'll get the email. There will be a placeholder that says, hey, there was an attachment on here. It may have been unsafe. And Microsoft will actually take that attachment, go spin it up in an isolated environment of their own, look for anything that may indicate that it's malware, and then take that action appropriately. So even if it isn't known malware, it also adds some of that additional protection for some unknown file types to make sure that this isn't a new piece of malware that maybe slipped past some of those known definitions and is trying to get into your environment.
Gotcha. So that goes a little bit above and beyond EOP because EOP is doing malware scanning and it's doing, you know, hourly scans and it does have real-time heuristics and things, but it's not stripping attachments and quarantining them for users and things like that. So one of the other things you mentioned was phishing or spoofing attempts, right? So I'm trying to send email as my CEO or, you know, I'm trying to be HR at contoso.com or things like that. So what kind of additive benefits do consumers or of ATP get in that service, in that area?
So this one was interesting. I actually hadn't looked at this one until recently, but it gives you a report and some more control over who might be spoofing email addresses. So again, Office 365, by default, there's going to be spoofing protection in there. It's not like if you have Exchange Online and you don't have ATP, you're not going to have any spoofing protection. This spoofing intelligence gives you some additional control over that spoofing. So for instance, in my tenant, I can go into my security and compliance center and I can go down to the threat management, go look at my policies, and it's under anti-spam. So if I go under the anti-spam settings in my Office 365 tenant, I have an additional option down at the bottom that's spoof intelligence. And I can go in here and look at senders that are spoofing. And I go into mine and I actually see some in mine of senders that are spoofing. Now, this is where you get some of that additional control is, for me, it's because I use software like Freshdesk or Zendesk, where you use that for support tickets. So people email support at intelligencmycompany.com, and I'm probably going to get all kinds of spam from you guys, but you email that, and it actually redirects it to a Freshdesk email, and then if I reply within Freshdesk, it sends it from Freshdesk, which in a way is spoofing because it's coming from Freshdesk, it's sending on behalf of my IntelliJink account, and it shows up in the spoofing report. Now, what I get with ATP is I can go in and say, hey, is this allowed to spoof? I'm using MailChimp for sending out emails. or again, you're using a help desk solution, there are legitimate reasons why an email address may show up as attempting to spoof it because you are using some of these third-party products that are sending on behalf of you. I get a nice drop-down now where I can go in and say, hey, if it's coming from Freshdesk and it's support@intellijink.com, yes, that's allowed to spoof because that is a very valid reason. I've set it up. I've configured it. I want those messages to go out on behalf of me. Or again, MailChimp for newsletters or bulk mailings. But then you can also go in and say, hey, you know what? This other one, this, I don't want this one spoofing my email address. This is actually a malicious spoofer. I'm going to go in right away and say, nope, not allowed to spoof. It gives you some additional details too. Who the sender is, what user they spoofed, how many messages have been sent using spoofing, and then if you've gotten any complaints. So the number of user complaints about, hey, this is a spoofed email. So all of those different details are what you get. And you can go in and view some more detailed reports, how that decision was set, authentication results, when that email address was last spoofed. So again, a lot of different details in there and advanced controls that you get when it comes to that spoofing intelligence to help control spoofing and block spoofing from happening within your Office 365 tenant.
So that doesn't preclude the need to do generic email hygiene, right? Like everybody should still do SPF and DKIM and DMARC and all those kinds of things. But this lets you, like you could certainly do all these things by leveraging those features, right? And maybe even just EOP and conditional hard fails and everything else. This is just wrapping it up in a nicer UI and making it a lot easier for you, right? So if I do happen to do like conditional fails, I'll see all that stuff come through my environment and I can still continue to have Exchange as an engine with my mail flow in the background, be able to filter and monitor that out for me. And then do you get regular reporting on that too? So out of just going into ATP and saying, hey, let me look at the users, let me dive in a little bit more high level and just get general trends and ideas and things like that?
You do. You get some additional reports. And again, then these surface up under the report dashboard in security and compliance, or in that security and compliance center. So you get like an additional 3 reports around some of this ATP protection. So you get the ATP file types reports, where you can actually go in and see a whole list of reports on how many malicious URLs were detected, malicious Excel attachments, PowerPoint attachments, Flash attachments, other attachments that didn't fall into any of those categories, and view all of those details around those malicious file types that were sent, that got detected. Just like with a lot of the other reports too, you can create a schedule. So if you're an admin, again, of a large organization, and you have hundreds of thousands of emails coming in every day, maybe you want to get a report of, are people hammering us? What type of malicious files are getting sent? You can schedule that report. So you just get a regular update, weekly, daily, of what types of malicious files are detected. The other one you get as a part of that is your ATP message disposition. So this deals a lot more with the malware, what messages got replaced, messages that are monitored, messages replaced by dynamic email delivery. So dynamic email delivery is that aspect we mentioned earlier where email goes through without the attachment and that attachment gets scanned and either stripped out or delivered later once Microsoft has been able to determine with confidence they're comfortable of on whether this was actually malware or not. So again, you get some details around how those messages work, how those messages were handled that came into your environment. And then the last one you get is just an overall threat protection status report. So this one gives you much more of that high level. It kind of takes some of that malware, the ATP file types, safe link, safe attachments. And this is that high level report that gives you those details on, okay, how many messages got caught by safe attachments, by the anti-malware engine, phishing, all that type of stuff. So those are kind of the 3 reports that you do get as a part of ATP2 to actually help you get that high-level overview of what's actually going on within your environment around ATP, around those threat detections.
Very cool. So we've kind of beat email to death a little bit. Why don't we talk about SharePoint and OneDrive and Teams and some of that functionality that came over there? So being that ATP is typically so email-centric, or it has been in the past, right? Safe links, safe attachments, spoof intelligence, and anti-phishing. How does it help with files that are stored in SharePoint, or how does it help in SharePoint land?
So in SharePoint land, and again, the title is, if you know how SharePoint, Teams, OneDrive, all of that works, you know that while they're saying it's Office 365 ATP for SharePoint, OneDrive, and Teams, it's really ATP for SharePoint. Because under the scenes, all three of those are SharePoint, they're SharePoint document libraries. So that's really what this is they've taken some of that ATP functionality features around safe links, safe attachments, more on the safe attachments, again, the file side, and extended that over to SharePoint files. So like you said, this started in Exchange. So all of the administration for this, all of this still kind of shows up when you're looking for it in Exchange. So the first thing to do to turn it on is you have to go over to your Security and Compliance Center again, look at your policies, and it's under ATP Safe Attachments. So again, you think ATP Safe Attachments, email, that's where OneDrive, SharePoint, Teams is as well. And there's just, all there is for it is just a little checkbox. So up at the top, it says protect files in SharePoint, OneDrive, Microsoft Teams. You click it, you turn it on. It may take a little while to start taking effect, but at this point in time, that's really all the control over it you have. All you have to do is just click that checkbox to turn it on. And now what this does is it starts protecting those files in SharePoint, OneDrive, and Teams, or again, SharePoint document libraries, as people are trying to download them. So if some malware gets onto one of your users' computers, if it's in a Word document, an Excel document, maybe a zip file they upload, and it gets into SharePoint, SharePoint doesn't necessarily actively scan all of these. So it's not doing like that virus scanning where it's just always going through your environment, churning through all your files, trying to find malicious files. It ties it more to different signals, users sharing it, guest activity, accessing or maybe uploading a folder or a file. Because if you have some of those guest users that have the options to contribute to your SharePoint site, you don't necessarily know what protection they actually have on their side to prevent them from uploading files to your SharePoint environment.
I just kind of want to be clear for a second. So SharePoint Online and the associated workloads, right? So team sites associated with Microsoft Teams, your OneDrive site, things like that, those do have virus protection, right? So Microsoft is actively scanning files on upload. So if you went into your environment today and you didn't have ATP and you were like a business premium customer, right? And you upload like an eCar file, it's going to fail because they are doing that scanning, right? So what we're talking about is files have made it into the environment and now they might have something else that raises a signal that says this could be malicious in some way, shape, or form, right? So it's a valid Excel file, right? But maybe that Excel file has a macro in it and now the engine is seeing that, oh, you know, this thing's getting shared a whole bunch. Let me just do a quick check. Oh, it's got a macro in it. And oh, that macro is a known thing that we see in our heuristics is bad. Now we're going to block it, right? So that's what ATP is bringing to the table here.
Exactly. And thanks for that clarification, because it is. We don't want you to think that nothing's being protected. This is that extra layer of protection. And then as it uses all those different signals, the guest activity, sharing, uses some smart heuristics, once it identifies those files, it doesn't delete them from your SharePoint environment. It leaves them there, but it does mark it as unsafe, and it prevents users from downloading and opening these files. So just like with the Exchange Online ATP, if it detects malware, it's not going to let you get to it. It's going to delete it. It's going to block you from it. Just like in SharePoint now, once it detects those malicious files, it prevents you from accessing them anymore. You can alert your admin, they can go in, they can clean it up, they can figure out, hey, do we actually need this file? Did it just get infected? Where we need to clean it, re-upload it, whatever. So that's how it works with SharePoint and OneDrive at this time. Again, super basic. There's not really any policies you can set or any configuration you can do around it other than say, hey, start protecting these files from malware and prevent users from downloading or opening them if we detect malware in these files?
I think there's a couple things people need to know, right? So one is that while this gives you coverage for SharePoint, it doesn't give you 100% coverage, right? So it's not constantly scanning every single file in every single tenant and every single environment. It's doing asynchronous scanning based on those signals that you mentioned, right? User sharing, guest activity, anything else they see going on, you know, whether it's your tenant or cross tenant, things like that. I'm not aware of a way to, once files are locked with this feature, where like admins could go in and download it, and maybe they want to run it through and see what's malicious about it, or put it into kind of their segregated environment to go ahead and do that testing. So once it's locked, it's kind of locked. It's a little bit weird there. And then I'm going to put you on the spot. There's one thing that I really wasn't sure of, and I've never tried it myself. Does tooling like OneDrive for Business synchronization, so that synchronization client, does that respect those ATP locks? Or what, like, what happens if I've synced that library or that OneDrive and then it finds a malicious file? Is that still available for me locally, or does the OneDrive client do anything there?
That is a very good question. I don't know. Time to go find it. Do you have some malware you can send me?
Sure, I'll get right on that.
I'm going to assume that because it blocks a user from downloading it, and again, this is just an assumption. I have not tested this. I haven't validated this. But because it's blocking not just opening it, but downloading it, I would think and hope that the OneDrive client actually respects that and says, same type of thing. Hey, the OneDrive client, you cannot download this because it's a malicious file. I would hope that's how it works. It makes sense to me, but I don't know for sure.
Well, since you said you hope it works that way, we're pretty much guaranteed that it doesn't.
I didn't say that.
I did.
Okay.
It's okay. Your secret's safe with me.
And the other 900 people that are listening.
Perfect. So anything else about ATP that you think people should know? Kind of closing thoughts?
There's one other kind of little setting that I've found as I was playing with this around safe links. So if you have safe links, you have it enabled, there's a default policy that applies to the entire organization. Just a single policy, you can make some slight tweaks to it. But in there, there's also a checkbox that lets you use safe links in Office 365 Pro Plus for Office for iOS and Android. So this is not email messages. It is the actual Office Pro Plus clients on mobile devices that creates a safe link policy for email recipients. Again, this is one I just found. I don't know exactly how it works, but it also takes some of that safe links protection and extends it out to those Pro Plus clients for iOS and Android. So something on my list I want to dig into a little more. Again, if one of you guys have played with it, have a few more details, send us a message. And then we'll cover it in a future episode of what that does. But this also does extend to mobile devices. Just one little tidbit to take a look at. But again, ATP, it's not, don't feel like you absolutely have to go get this to be protected. Office 365 without this is very secure. It has a lot of the virus scanning. It has a lot of protection there already. So don't feel like this is something you need. But if you are looking for that advanced level of protection, just kind of taking your security to the next level, this is a good option. Again, it's included in E5. I think I forgot to mention the price when you get it as a standalone. Standalone subscriptions for this are $2 a user a month. So for some of this protection, if you get hit with a lot of malware or people sending phishing links and you have a lot of issues with users clicking on them, accessing malware, it's relatively cheap to get that extra layer of protection for your users.
Cool. Well, I think that about wraps us up and takes us to time.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Another good episode, and we will talk to you again next time.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.